first 8 bars of Last Night When We Were Young by Yip Harburg to music by Harold Arlen. He says, last night,
last night
when we were young,
when we were young,
love was a star.
Love was a star.
A song unsung.
A song unsung.
Where is that star that,
where is that
shone
star
so bright?
That seemed so bright.
Ages ago.
Ages ago.
Last night.
Last night.
That is marvelous. He puts a lifetime in one 8 bars.
Well, I think nothing is more evocative than a song. And songs are associated with many things. You know, we march, we go to war with them, we bury our loved ones, all kinds of functions that songs have.
I always say that music itself is one of the higher spiritual arts. But with lyrics, it tells you what it's about. And because it is that way, immediately we attach ourselves to it because it is so attached to our lives, our everyday living.
A song lets you examine an emotion and feel it with a total intensity in that short time. In other words, it slows up emotion so that you can examine it and feel it. And I don't know any form that comes even close to it.
So
music can stir the soul, but a song can pierce the heart. A song is a mini-drama, a short story told to music. It connects the songwriter, the singer, and the audience to the same emotion. It may be joy or pain, but it's usually feeling, pure feeling. And that's what it's all about. I'm Nancy Wilson, and on this edition of Jazz Profiles, Jazz and Song, The Words, we're celebrating the writers and interpreters of lyrics, those people responsible for the power of words in song.
You can listen to instrumental music, but when you put words to it, it reaches people in a way that touches them because it uses language, which is their instrument. I mean, it's their music.
Singer and lyricist John Hendricks.
There's an apocryphal story of Mrs. Oscar Hammerstein II being at a party, and Mrs. Jerome Kern was talking to some women, and she was saying, oh, my husband wrote Old Man River. And Mrs. Oscar Hammerstein II walked over and says, I beg your pardon. He says, but I heard what you said, and I must correct you. She said, your husband wrote da, 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 da. My husband wrote Old Man River. There lies the importance of the lyric.
Old Man River, that Old Man River, he must know something, but don't say nothing. He just keeps rolling, he keeps on rolling along.
When you take an instrumental tune and you make a song out of it by adding a lyric to it, it gives that piece of music a presence that it never really had it before. It kind of makes it into something more than what it was.
Will Friedwald, author of the book Jazz Singing.
The great bulk of strictly instrumental jazz pieces are never really, you know, remembered by anybody other than the musicians who play them. And obviously the best known pieces are the ones that have lyrics. Midnight Sun, which was an instrumental written for Lionel Hampton's band by Sonny Burke, who was an arranger for that band. Johnny Mercer heard it on his car radio one day and just, you know, immediately started thinking of words to go with that title. And now it's considered one of the great, you know, vocal jazz standards.
Your lips were like a red and ruby chalice, warmer than a summer night. The clouds were the palace, rising to a snowy height.
As a singer, the spoken word is more important to me than how high I can sing or how many notes I can fit into a phrase. I'm trying to tell a story. That's the difference, I think. For some singers, it's about the music. It's about the runs and whatnot. For me, it's about the word. It's about what I'm saying. I'm trying to take you to a place through these words.
Was there ever such a night? It's a thrill I still don't quite believe. But after you were gone, there was still some stardust on my sleeve.
Midnight Sun has a beautiful melody, but its greatness comes from its lyrics. Johnny Mercer used stunning imagery to tell a love story. Silver rain, moonlit veil, stardust on my sleeve. These word pictures make the song unforgettable.
But oh, my darling, always I remember when your lips were close to mine and I saw the midnight sun.
Midnight Sun describes a romantic encounter, a moment in time. A good song lyric is a vignette, a compact, concise slice of life. It can symbolize an entire era, or it can encapsulate a human emotion. John Hendricks.
You know, there's so many words you can think of to say, so many anecdotes you could tell to illustrate loneliness. But Lorenz Hart wrote 1,000 page book on loneliness in 4 lines, the entire bridge of it never entered my mind. You have what I lack myself.
You have what I lack myself.
And now I even have to scratch my back myself.
And now I even have to scratch my back myself. Once you warn me.
In 4 lines, the man delineated human loneliness in all its ramifications. That is what a good lyricist does. You have to be a poet, I think, to be a good lyricist. Yip Harburg wrote Brother Can You Spare a Dime, the song that describes the American Depression. Once I built a railroad, made it run against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Great song.
Once I built a railroad, made it run. Made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, and now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime?
A good lyric should not only be concise, it should also be original. That usually means that the lyric writer has to find a new way to say, I love you. Lyricist Marilyn Bergman.
Songwriting, lyric writing is such an economical form. You have to tell so much, usually in so little time. Every line has to move the story forward. And if you look at the master songwriters, it's a challenge every time to find a way to say something that hasn't been said before. If not to say something that has been said before altogether, you know.
the genius of jazz lyric writing is, again, just phenomenal.
Norman Simmons.
And that's what you look for. You look for this one line that just states the whole song. How do we keep the music playing? How do we make it last? And that's not about music. You know, that's about us. You know, and that's so real about everyday life. And that's one of the great things about lyric writing. This indirect approach of using everything that we live with to talk about a situation that is so personal, as besides saying, I love you.
How do you keep the music playing? How do you make it last? How do you keep the song from fading too fast? How do you lose yourself to someone and never lose your way? How do you not run out of new things to say? If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows. Music never ends.
How do you keep the music playing? With lyrics by Alan and Marilyn Bergman, sung by Freddie Cole. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to Jazz in Song, The Words, on NPR's Jazz Profiles. Singing can sometimes be a more romantic way to express love than speaking. Singer and guitarist John Pizzarelli describes a time when a song's lyrics did just that.
I'd had it worked out. I said, you know, this would be a good song to propose to somebody to. And the gentleman raised his hand and he said, I'll take that. And he got on his knee and proposed right in the club to his girlfriend. And then we sang, Love Is Here to Stay.
But oh my dear, our love is here to stay.
But I think that this particular song form, it's the compact novel. Every song, it's its own little short story, and you can take it with you, and it's easy to carry along with you and to have that lyric to recite to somebody, because it's like having your own little short story in your pocket that you can give to somebody.
It's clear our love is here to stay.
Many people believe that Johnny Mercer was the Shakespeare of lyric writers. He covered the entire spectrum of songwriting, from country to uptown. His lyrics were poetic, full of imagery and symbolism. Lyricist Alan and Marilyn Bergman consider Johnny Mercer their mentor. Marilyn Bergman.
One of my favorite lyrics that Johnny wrote is Emily, for example. That lyric is so beautiful, just read like that. Two lovers alone and out of sight, seeing images in the firelight. As my eyes visualize a family, I see Emily dreamily too. How do you get better than that? And particularly with Johnny Mandel's gorgeous melody, just gorgeous.
Two lovers alone and out of sight, seeing images in the firelight. As my eyes visualize family. They see dreamily Emily.
Lyricist and author Gene Lees has written a biography of Mercer. He describes how Johnny met the challenge of writing lyrics to a melody written by Hoagy Carmichael in Bix Beiderbecke style.
Johnny and Hoagy were going to write a musical on the life of Bix Beiderbecke, and it never got done. But they did write some songs for it. Now, Skylark sounds amazingly like a Bix Beiderbecke trumpet solo, in the sense that it has at the end of its phrases, it has these, like trumpet players will play a fill on the long empty note going through the harmony to get to the next phrase. And Hoagy wrote it that way, and Johnny matched it.
And in your lonely flight, haven't you heard the music in the night? Wonderful music, faint as a will-o'-the-wisp, crazy as a loon, sad as a gypsy serenading the moon. Oh, skylark, I don't know if you can find these things, but my heart is riding on your wings. So if you see them anywhere, won't you lead me there?
If you want to call it poetry, okay, it's poetry, but it's better than poetry.
A friend commented to Gene about Johnny's lyric writing brilliance.
He says to me, don't you think Johnny was more than a lyricist? He was a poet. I said, no, he was more than a poet. He was a lyricist.
The main difference between poetry and lyrics is that poetry is read and lyrics are sung. That makes writing lyrics much more challenging. The Bergmans explain.
Poetry doesn't have the obligation to write for the human voice, which has its limitations as much as any instrument does.
There is a big difference between poetry and lyric writing. So, lyrics can be poetic, but, you know, the poet has it easier because they can read the poetry at any tempo, any cadence whatsoever. Lyrics are confined to these notes and bylines.
And poetry is meant to be read. The poet can use the exact word that he or she means to express an idea. But there are words, you know, that may be the exact words, but they don't sing.
Gene Lees describes how to write a singable lyric.
The most singable vowels in the English language are oo and o. And Johnny wrote this lyric. He built this entire song out of the oo and o sounds, and then when he needed them, the liquid consonant L. And once you know this principle and you see this, and I've done this in front of audiences, and they're always astounded by the brilliance of the craftsmanship in this. I remember you, you're the one who made my dreams come true a few kisses ago.
I remember you. You're the one who made my dreams come true a few kisses ago. I remember you. You're the one who said, I love you too. I do. Didn't you know?
It's amazing writing. And I positive this was not done consciously.
Alan Bergman.
He wrote mostly to the melodies and to write something like that, wedding it, those words to that melody. It's genius.
Song lyrics can express the most profound human emotions in just a few musical moments. Like poetry, lyrics are word pictures put to rhyme. But unlike poetry, they are written to be sung. It's a challenging art, and John Hendricks is one of its most talented practitioners. He's called the Poet Laureate of Jazz, and he's known for his special talent of creating lyrics to improvised instrumentals.
Why we're rolling on our ass a little, 1,000 miles a minute, our brothers think it's standing still. When you think of that, it's kind of peculiar. Even so, you ought to know, but I call it cheating up your brain. Otherwise, you wouldn't park your car too slow. Revolution, not a bad habit of mine. Revolution.
Will Friedwald.
John Hendricks is a lyricist on lots of different levels. He's a very, very gifted and talented individual. John can write a lyric to a song that's sort of, you know, in the Tin Pan Alley tradition of, you know, just writing 32 bars, you know, to the main theme of a jazz tune. But John can also do this other thing that no one else in the Tin Pan Alley world can do, which is to adapt the whole piece from beginning to end, including the solos, the orchestrations, even the drum breaks. He could take the whole thing and write lyrics to that, make that into a sort of bigger canvas for himself to work on in telling, you know, a more involved, a deeper, more complicated story. But Hendricks is really the all-time master of that.
Norman Simmons has played piano accompaniment for Carmen McRae, Joe Williams, and many other great jazz singers.
The one we just recorded with Carol Sloan was Cottontail, an amazing story about a bunny rabbit. For one thing, Cottontail was a great composition as an instrumental. But John's concept of this little rabbit in this garden and some of the phrases that are in there, the comedy, you know what I mean, the imagination that he has of putting this whole story together, the story is just so fantastic that you just get an effect from the audience right away. And that would happen whether they knew the song or not. That's how great the lyric is.
Singer Carol Sloan.
Way back in my childhood, I heard a story so true about a funny bunny stealing some food from a garden he knew.
His mama got worried. She told the bunny one day that there was a farmer, heed what I say or he'll blow you away. He knew his mama was right, so why don't he do what she say? Maybe he just don't dig it, part of his habit, 'cause he's a rabbit.
And then, of course, you go into Ben Webster's long solo, which is, out of the garden where carrots are dense, I found a hole in the fence. Every morning when the things are still, I kind of crawl through the hole and eat my fill. The other rabbits say I'm taking dares, and maybe I am, but who cares? I'm a hootin' rabbit, yeah, I got a carrot habit. Every day I'm trying to avoid it. What'll I do? I know that I've enjoyed it. Really and true, I'm begging mama's pardon. All the time I'm heading for the garden. Whee, yeah, yeah, yeah. Everything is free while the farmer's napping. Every little carrot is a stolen delight, and I keep forgetting about the daylight. So one day as I was sneaking a meal, that farmer pulled a real greeting deal. Came at me with a big shotgun, and then I ran on. I hustled really swiftly as I could. I slid from there without a second to spare.
John Hendricks writes lyrics for an instrumental like a dramatist writes a play. He creates a story and a cast of characters.
Jumping at the Woodside. You know, the Woodside is a hotel where all the bands used to stay. And you could always get a room there cheap, and you could practice your instrument any time of the hour, any hour of the day or night. So from that, I constructed a story about staying at the Woodside. I gotta go. I wanna blow a little room. I'm out of fun. I'm going home. I gotta run. Then there's an alto solo. Now, a little message, and it ain't no motel. I'm telling you what the place is. Never heard of such a hotel. Cop a room, and then you really can tend to be as I gotta go, you know, and now and so on and so on. And then the soloists come and comment about the hotel, you know. And so it becomes a whole mini story about staying at the Woodside.
I gotta split, I gotta go.
Sleep some rest, you'll be blessed. Then later when you feel greater,
jumping in
the hall and everybody has a ball. And what a ball, I do mean, it's jumping every minute. As soon as you get inside the door, well, you can feel the shaking floor. And that alone will tell you the woodside is quite a jumping scene. Lord, I'm blind, get out of your mind, oh, women and wine. You try it, you dig it, everybody has a ball in my hotel.
Jumping at the Woodside by Lambert, Hendricks, and Ross, recorded in the late 1950s. Just ahead, more about the creation of musical stories from some of today's most talented lyricists. And we'll look at the art of interpreting songs. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to Jazz Profiles, a tribute to jazz and song, The Words, on NPR, National Public Radio. Alan and Marilyn Bergman are probably the most sought-after lyricists in the business today. They have written lyrics for the melodies of Michel Legrand, Roger Kellaway, and Johnny Mandel, among others. They've received 16 Academy Award nominations, and they've won 3 Oscars and 3 Emmys. 2 of their best-known lyrics are The Windmills of Your Mind and The Way We Were.
Alan and Marilyn Bergman? To me, that's the most profound songwriting team that I've ever had the pleasure of knowing and doing material that was written by them. They're absolutely phenomenal.
Drummer-singer Grady Tate expresses admiration for the lyrics of Where Do You Start? A poignant description of a couple separating.
Where do you start? How do you separate the present from the past? How do you deal with all the things you thought would last that didn't last? With bits of memory scattered here and there, I look around and don't know where to start. Which books are yours? Which hopes and dreams belong to you and which are mine? Our lives are scattered like the branches of a vine that intertwine. So many habits that we'll have to break, and yesterday's we'll have to take apart. But someday there'll be a song, or something in the air again, to catch me by surprise, and you'll be there again. It's just,
Alan and Marilyn Bergman are prolific, but they're also profound. They've written lyrics for many songs, and their lyrics are original and timeless. People wonder how they do it.
I guess the magic of being able to do anything creative is that most of the time, you don't know where it comes from. I guess that's called inspiration. But it's very hard to reconstruct because you really don't know what associations are racing through your brain. But what happens if we write a song about people having broken up and trying to separate their lives after being so close for so long? A divorce. When people have to break up and break their lives apart. Well, I already hear the lines that came out of just that little stuff I just said. You think of lives which are tangled. You think of people having to separate things, you know, belongings.
Which books are yours? Which tapes and dreams belong to you? And which are mine? Our lives are tangled like the branches of a vine that intertwine. So many habits that we'll have to break, and yesterdays we'll have to take apart. Someday there'll be a song or something in the air again.
People have been convinced that we must have been separated 3 or 4 times in our marriage in order to have written that song. And we disappoint them by telling them, no, but if you're a dramatist, then it doesn't say you have to live it. just says you have to understand it.
And though I don't know where and don't know when I'll find myself in love again, I promise there will always be a tiny part no one will see, a tiny part deep in my heart that stays in love with you.
The Bergmans describe how they fulfilled a request by record producer Quincy Jones to write a sexy song.
Q called us one day and said, I have a melody I'm going to send over. It's from a young Brazilian composer, Ivan Lins. I want you to write an X-rated lyric to it.
That was the instruction. So we sat down and turned the lights down low. And played this melody over and over, and it is a very seductive melody. And we then wrote as X as we could get. Quincy then wanted Patty Austin to record it, which she did. She made a great record. And when we got to the session, there were two lines in there that Patty, who was now not a shrinking violet, Patty said, I can't sing these lines. Are you kidding? I can't sing these. So we changed them a little bit. Yeah, don't ask us to tell you what
remember.
They originally were. The magic of being able to do anything creative is that most of the time you don't know where it comes from. I guess that's called inspiration, but it's very hard to reconstruct because you really don't know what associations are racing through your brain. And the music speaks to us. I mean, I guess that's why we chose to do what we do. You know, artists see colors and light and shapes, and we hear ideas in songs.
Songwriters create songs, and singers give them life. Lyrics are scripts, and singers are actors. And as an actor interprets a role, a singer individualizes a song. It isn't the voice that makes a singer a master interpreter. It's the heart. Singer and lyricist John Hendricks.
You sing with your voice, but you don't sing from your voice. You sing from your spirit, from your soul, from your heart, from your experience, from your feeling center, from what you know of life. A singer with this strong feeling center can move more people than the most trained and able singer. Louis Armstrong's a good example of that. Louis Armstrong could sing a ballad with that gravelly voice that is no voice at all, and you would be in tears by the first 8 bars. You're ready to cry because every bit of feeling in that man is coming out through that voice.
Cold, empty bed, springs on his lid, feel like old Ned, wished I was dead. What did I do to be so
black and blue. Even the mouse ran from my house. They laugh at you and scorn you too. What did I do to be so black and blue?
Marilyn and Alan Bergman.
There are singers who are fantastic interpreters of lyrics who don't necessarily have great vocal equipment. Nat Cole was not a great singer.
You mean vocal equipment when you say
that. I'm talking about vocal equipment. Yeah. I think Johnny Mercer was a wonderful interpreter of lyrics, as is Shirley Horn and Diana Krall today.
Of course, Barbara Streisand and Frank Sinatra.
Carmen McRae, who, unlike a lot of jazz singers who were more interested in using their voices like instruments than they were in lyrics, Carmen was, I think, very interested in lyrics.
The Bergmans did the lyrics for Roger Kellaway's I Have a Feeling I've Been Here Before, which he wrote for Carmen McRae.
I have the feeling I've been here before, more often than I choose to tell. And though the view's been twice as clear before, by now I know it pretty well. Those telltale things you tried to let go by our old familiar.
If we decided that that whole song was a kind of wry look back at a relationship that didn't work from somebody who had had many of these with a great singer, we hear something and say, oh boy, that adds a layer of meaning to what we meant, you know, to what we thought we meant.
Though on the losing side, that carpet ride is always worth a try. I've seen the magic do.
The way she said the last line had a lot of little more pain in there.
She was never sentimental. It was always this kind of wry knowing. She was wonderful. I liked her a lot.
The only news when you've been here before is who goodbye. Goodbye.
Carmen McRae was a superb actress of song, and Frank Sinatra the penultimate actor. He had the ability to get under the skin of a lyric and make you believe every word he sang. Guitarist and singer John Pizzarelli.
When I hear Sinatra sing One for My Baby, he was able to be an actor for every song. He could swagger on songs like Fly Me to the Moon, but he also could be vulnerable when he sang a ballad. And, you know, he wasn't that guy in his mansion in Palm Springs. He was an average guy singing to a bartender. And he'd tell you, you're going to be the bartender, and I'm going to be the bum. I'm going to walk into this bar, and I want to drink until I forget about this girl, and you believed that.
It's 2:45. There's no one in the place except you and me. So set 'em up, Joe. I got a little story I think you should know. We're drinking, my friend, to the end of a brief episode. Make it one for my babe and one more for the road.
These lyrics by Johnny Mercer were a perfect vehicle for Sinatra.
One for My Baby is one of the most remarkable pieces of mini-drama ever conceived in a song form. It's like a one-act play, and it's a progression of emotions.
But this torch that I found, it's gotta be drowned, or it soon might explode. So make it one for my baby and one more for the road.
One for My Baby was recorded by Frank Sinatra in 1958. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to NPR's Jazz Profiles, a tribute to jazz and song, The Words. Many of our great interpreters of song are gone, but they live on in the inspiration they've created in others. Vocal schools abound all over the world with people who want to express themselves through jazz singing. Let's listen in on a vocal class at Jazz Camp West in Santa Cruz, California. It's taught by singer Rebecca Paris.
Any one set of lyrics can be expressed in many different ways. You can go radically polar. I mean, you really can, from like sarcasm to deep remorse, or, you know, like joy to abject sorrow can happen in tongue-in-cheek. So with words, I think for me it just brings it closer to my heart than it does anything else.
Rebecca demonstrates various ways a singer can approach a song. Here's God Bless the Child, interpreted different ways. She starts with a blues version.
Then that's got shall get. Them that's not shall lose.
And then Rebecca jazzes it up.
That's what the Bible says.
Then goes to a bossa nova tempo.
God bless the child. God bless the child who's got his own.
Three ways.
Rebecca Paris's goal is to have her students sing with sincere feeling. They first must understand not only the words of a lyric, but its underlying emotion.
My goal is for you to find and access memory cells, emotions, times in your life that can directly apply to the lyrics that you're learning and singing, because it is seriously the only way to individualize your performance. And language is your instant connection with who you're singing to, which is people.
She had them read the song before they sing it.
Somewhere, someday, we'll be close together. You wait and see. Oh, and by the way, this time, the dream's on me. Somewhere, someday, we'll be close together. Wait and see. By the way,
Any comments? Look at this. Look what you did to people. Look at, she's crimson and crying. You're choking me. I mean, this is like, do you understand the power that you have? Witness the power you have when you believe and tell the truth. Look at the power.
Rebecca is right. A truthful singer does have a special power. It's the power that comes from identifying with the emotions of lyrics and conveying those feelings to an audience, to make them respond in some way. The singer's responsibility is to take the message created by the lyricist and deliver it convincingly to the audience.
I think you can only work from what touches you, what amuses you, what moves you, and
the audience is really the final collaborator, so to speak.
The audience is a collaborator in the sense that in adding their associations to yours, they are then entering into the process in a way.
And they're getting the message, so to speak.
John Pizzarelli talks about the profound effect one of his songs had on a listener.
There's a guy who wrote me a letter about a song that I wrote. He had lost his wife in a car accident, and he didn't listen to any music for like a year and a half. And he wrote me this letter and said, I put on your song. It was a song called The Day That I Found You, and he said it took away all the sadness and made him think about the good things with his wife. And then he was able to listen to music again. And you get these letters and you think, you know, you might be doing something right.
I have found a world I never knew from just the vibrant voodoo that you do. I found true love the day that I found you.
I heard a song by Bonnie Raitt on an airplane, just her and piano. And I sat in my seat on the airplane and I cried. Because the song is so true, I can't make you love me. And that applies to the audience, to your father, your mother. It applies to anybody. And it's honest, it's raw and real.
'Cause I can't make you love me.
There are some songs, the lyrics are so good that by the time I'm through singing them, there are tears in my eyes. Gordon Jenkins, who did lyrics and music, each one remarkable. We did a song called This Is All I Ask, and he has a line in there. Children everywhere, when you shoot at bad men, shoot at me. Every time I sing that song, and I say that line, I cry, because that is so poignant. And it's so essentially religious. It's the Sermon on the Mount encapsulated into two lines. You know?
Children everywhere, when you shoot at bad men, shoot at me.
And the one song in particular that I've been thinking about lately is the song Somewhere Over the Rainbow. I tried to sing that song over the summer at the Umbria Jazz Festival, and it absolutely ruined me. I was crying my eyes out by the end. I was surprised I got through it. And it was something about that lyric hitting me at that particular moment. It's such a prayer. It's a melancholy song about a happy idea. And it just particularly got me that day to think how beautiful that song was and how just perfect that lyric is.
Somewhere over the rainbow skies are blue. And the dream.
A song can touch us like no other art form. Great lyricists put in the heart and soul,
and master interpreters add the flesh and blood, and the audience responds with laughter or tears. Words joined with music. Magic.
Someday I wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me.
Jazz and Song, The Words, was written, produced, and mixed by Joan Merrill and Saraya Muhammad. The executive producer for Jazz Profiles is Tim Owens. Assistant producer, Madeline Smith. Senior producer, Margaret Howes. Our website coordinator, John Murph. Administrative assistant, Linda Browen. Special thanks to Manoli Wetherill and Leo Del Aguila. To email us and for more information about this and other programs in our series, contact us through NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org or check us out at nprjazz.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles come from the Wallace Reader's Digest Funds, helping people to make the arts and culture an active part of their everyday lives. Additional support has been provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is NPR, where jazz lives.